Chapter 7. Within an hour, I found myself on the outskirts of the encampment with my wives, Zuag, Bulra, Bakoth, and Scourge. Chatteron and Feistrin had agreed to come along to help their fellow soldiers, and we were also joined by the gnomes of Grimthorn, since we would need the gnomes' help to get through the spike growth to get to the entrance into the Twilight region. The Grimthorn Elder was there, along with his silent soldiers and three gnomes, who had baskets strapped to their backs that reminded me of the ones the crystal harvesters wore. In the baskets, there was rich, dark soil that had a strong, peaty smell, and small, spiky vine plants grew out of it, so I wondered why the Grimthorn gnomes carried the dangerous plants with them. Was it a ceremonial thing, or did they love the plants they served so much that they always kept a bit of them close?
"Are you sure you don't want to come, Scourge?" Bakoth asked the thief with a grin. "The swamp is actually quite lovely once you get used to the smell."
"I was raised in the twilight,"
the Zinkari man replied with distaste.
"I have seen plenty of swamps."
"Good luck with the resistance,"
Amrila smirked.
"Are you going to speak with the quorum, or do you plan to just go to the cell leaders one by one?"
"Better to see the individual leaders I know I can trust," the gray-skinned man replied. "Ursinger has spies everywhere, even in the resistance, and for all we know, he might have bought one of the members of the quorum."
Who is the quorum?" I asked as I adjusted my backpack.
"It's how the collected leaders of the resistance are referred to,"
Scourge explained.
"It's much safer to search out the ones I know are loyal to the cause. I'll try to get word to Ekname about my progress and keep you informed."
"Thank you, Scourge," I said as I shook the Zinkari man's hand.
"Of course,"
the thief said with a roguish smile.
"Whatever you need to end the Mad Chief's tyranny. Eddie, farewell."
We said our goodbyes to the Horned Man and parted ways, and as Scourge went north toward the Yinni territory, the rest of us followed the Grimthorn Gnome south. The walk to the spike growth took a few hours, and I got to watch the gnomish soldiers as they communicated with one another in their strange sign language. The mute gnomes had always seemed so serious and stoic, but I saw two of the younger ones sign back and forth, and then one threw his head back as his shoulders shook and appeared to silently laugh. It was strange, even a little creepy, but it was good to see that humor existed in their culture.
"Hey, Nylame,"
I said quietly to the dark-haired elven woman. "Do you know what they're saying?"
"They're just talking about their lives,"
the princess replied as she watched the two young gnomes.
"One is courting a woman, and his friend is teasing him for being shy."
"Huh," I muttered, as I thought about how strange it was that they were talking about something so normal. "And what's the deal with the baskets of dirt?"
"Those are spike keepers,"
Nylame replied in a quiet undertone.
"It's their job to maintain the spike vine maze and make sure the growth doesn't grow unchecked."
"They're also responsible for clearing out any bodies that get caught in the spike growth,"
Bakoth added in a hushed voice.
"It's said they can control the vines and force them to grow at incredible rates. That's supposedly why they always keep a sprout of vine with them."
"Really?" I asked, as I thought about the implications of that idea. I wonder how fast they could grow a wall of thorns, or if they could trap someone with a sudden growth of vines.
"Possibly, but I've never seen them command the vines, other than to open the spike growth."
Nylame shrugged her muscular shoulders. I filed the thought away for future use, and we continued to walk to Grimthorn. Once we were in the gnomish village, the elder and his spike keepers performed the ritual to open the spike growth, and Nylame signed our thanks to them before we passed through the thorn-covered arch and into the vine maze beyond. The maze was every bit as eerie as I remembered it, and I breathed a sigh of relief when we reached the other side. Even the claustrophobic tunnels into the twilight were better than the silence in the vine maze. Once we were out of the tunnels, the party entered the twilight caverns that were filled with the dim light of the star-like gems in the stone walls and ceiling. Chatteron and Feistrin carried the gold-colored lanterns as we continued into the swamp where we'd killed the basilisk, and after a few short hours, the party found the skeletal remains of the massive reptile. The basilisk's carcass had been completely stripped by scavengers, and the empty sockets where the beast's eyes used to be stared out into the distance. The petrified Dolrath stood exactly as they had, still frozen in terror, since the day of the fight weeks ago, and I was glad to see they didn't look any worse for wear, considering the circumstances. "I think we should set up a perimeter," I said as I turned to Bakoth. There's no telling who or what might have moved into this swamp since the basilisk died, and we want to make sure Bulra and Chatteron can do their work without interruption.
"Yes, shield brother,"
The hawk-faced warrior nodded.
I would suggest you and Lady Nylame watch either side of the road. Your rifles have a great range and can cover a wide area. Then Zuag and Amrila can watch the western quadrant, while Festrin and I cover the east. That way we have a heavy and light fighter on either side.
That's a sound plan.
The orc captain rumbled his approval. Great, I agreed. We'll go with the general's idea then. Bakoth, I think it's best if you all keep your ear protection on hand, but wait to put them in so we can freely communicate for now. Zuag, take these. If there's a fight, squeeze them between your fingers and push one in each ear to protect them from the sound of the rifles. I handed Zuag and Bora each a set of silicon earplugs I'd started to buy in bulk to bring with me to the gloom, and the two orcs studied the small plugs with interest. Then Nylame opened the large leather bag her mother had given us that contained the potions. Bulra and Chatteron pulled out 5 softball-sized glass bottles with thick silk cords tied around them like tightly fitted nets, and then I realized the cords were there to cushion the glass through transportation in the leather bag. Each bottle was also well-corked and sealed with what looked like wax. How does the potion work? I asked the brunette seer. If the soldiers are all stoned, they can't drink it.
That is very true,
Bulra replied with a mysterious smile.
Which is why we will use this.
The orcish woman pulled out a metal canister with a pump handle at its top that reminded me of an old-fashioned plant mister I remembered my grandmother used to have. There was a thin tube that made up the nozzle, a little plunger on top someone could depress with their thumb, and a metal ring handle.
We pour the potion into this mist bottle to apply it directly on the soldiers,
the mystic explained.
But we must be careful to waste as little as possible. Then Chatteron and I will watch over them as the substance does its work, and we will apply more as it is needed. The process will take some time.
How long? I asked, as I looked at the 4 Dolrath who'd been petrified.
It is hard to say.
Bulra sighed as she also looked around at the frozen warriors.
They have been in this state for quite some time. I would guess several hours, and then they will need some time to rest and recover until their limbs are supple enough to comfortably move.
All right. I nodded and turned to the rest of the party. We'll keep up the perimeter until the frozen soldiers are well enough to be moved, and then we'll find a safe place to set up camp and let everyone get some rest. But hopefully we won't have to sleep out here. The rest of us took up our positions as Bulra and Chatteron set about their work. Unfortunately, the fight with the basilisk had been chaotic at first, and the paralyzed Dolrath were spread out on either side of the road. The area that the 6 of us had to cover was about the size of a football field, and to keep fatigue from setting in, we walked back and forth along our quadrants. That meant it was a very boring few hours, and I would only see any of the others once every 20 minutes or so, when our passes happened to coincide. The trees were spindly, and not very dense because of the swampy terrain, but they still worked to obscure our view of the surrounding area. But at one point, I was able to see Chatteron's slim frame and bald head as he helped the willowy seer spray the Dolrath soldiers with the Karardu's potion. The pair went from warrior to frozen warrior, and the pretty orc misted each of the soldiers with a yellowish spray.
Do you think it will take much longer?
Bakoth asked eventually as he approached me on the far end of his patrol.
The trees here are sinister and foreboding. They make my skin crawl.
It's been about 2 hours from what I can tell, I replied with a shrug. I'm sure it can't be much longer now. Bulra said it would take several hours, and we just need them to be able to move enough to get them to a safe-ish camping spot.
Let us pray to the gods they are restored soon,
the red-haired general muttered as his sharp eyes scanned the trees around us.
All is clean on the eastern side.
Thank you, General. I smiled, and then we both turned as we began to walk in opposite directions on our patrols. I walked back toward the road, and I was lost in thought as I tried not to think about how creepy the spindly trees were, now that Bakoth had pointed it out. As I crossed the hard-packed dirt path, I looked to my left where one of the petrified soldiers stood, with his hands partly raised and a look of horror on his stony face. Bulra and Chatteron must have been off attending to another patient, and the frozen warrior stood alone, about 4 yards away and just off the road. I started to turn my head away, but then I saw a small movement out of the corner of my eye. So I stopped dead in my tracks, looked back at the paralyzed soldier, and stared at him for a moment. I didn't know the warrior by name, but I remembered he'd been one of the spearmen with us that day several weeks ago. The elven man sported a short mohawk and a well-trimmed beard, and I could almost swear his skin had recovered some of its blue undertone, but it was hard to tell in the purple light of the twilight.
I stared hard at the soldier as I wondered if it was just the general eeriness of the swamp or a trick of the light that had made it look like he had moved a little. I was so intent in my examination of the warrior that when his right hand twitched, I almost shit myself. Then I felt a wave of relief for the petrified man's sake. I didn't know if being turned to stone was like a blank coma or if he had been somehow aware of his state this whole time, but it was a nightmare either way. I ran up to the spearman and looked into his frozen face. "It's going to be all right," I said, as I hoped the warrior could hear me. "Bulrut, Chatteron, over here, someone's starting to move." I could see the texture of the man's face had started to smooth and looked like skin again, though his expression was still one of abject horror. It was creepy to look at, but I wanted to help the warrior and be a comfort to him, so I stared into his wide, panicked eyes. "I'll stay with you until the healers get here," I assured the silent spearman. Then his frozen jaw started to slowly work and move, and a rattle of ragged breath squeezed its way out of the Dolrath soldier. The sound continued, and I had to fight to keep my hopeful expression as the terrible gurgle went on. "Save your strength," I said in a sympathetic voice. "We can talk when you're better."
Ground.
The soldier's voice was hardly more than a sigh. "What?" I replied, caught off guard.
In the ground.
The spearman croaked as he struggled to form words. I stared at the partially paralyzed elf with a confused expression for a moment, but then I felt as the ground began to shake beneath my feet. Something was close. Something big. Fuck. I looked up just as Bulrun Chatteron came into view, and the beautiful seer ran toward me with a huge, excited smile on her face because the potion had started to work. Neither of them was aware of the danger.
"No!"
I shouted as I ran toward them and waved my hands to warn them away.
"Get the fuck out of here! There's something—"
But I was cut off as the ground bucked beneath our feet, and a giant crack split the road only 2 yards ahead of me as a fissure appeared in the ground. From the broken ground, 2 large clawed hands appeared, followed by a spiked, mud-colored body. Then 2 twisted horns that stuck straight up from a bald and lumpy head emerged, and only tatters of lank, greasy hair clung to it. Finally, this slimy bastard turned its huge head and looked down the road toward me. I didn't know what the fuck this was, but it had a wide, flat mouth like a toad and orb-like, wet eyes. When the mud-colored monster blinked, a thin, clear film clung to the protruding eyes for a millisecond after its eyelids had retracted, and my stomach turned a little.
"Chatteron!"
I shouted in a hoarse voice.
"Get Bora out of here!"
I stepped around the petrified spearman, put my pro-X's over my ears, and dropped to 1 knee as I flicked off the Galil's safety. I didn't want to accidentally blow chunks off the frozen elf, or risk the monster crashing into him. If the soldier were knocked to the ground now, the petrified parts of him could shatter or break off, despite the soft, marshy ground. Then I shouldered my rifle and clicked on the flashlight. I guessed from the size and color of the ugly fuck's eyes that it was something that lived in the dark and the muck, so when the flashlight of the Galil came on, the beast bellowed and tried to cover its face, and I squeezed the trigger 3 times. I saw at least 2 of the bullets hit, but they sunk into the spongy skin of the monster.
"Fuggly-ass freak!" I snarled.
"I got something for you, then." I dropped my mag of mundane bullets and quickly switched it out for a mag filled with Toric specialty bullets.
"Everyone to me!"
I hollered at the top of my lungs as I clipped in the new mag.
"I got a big horny toad over here!"
I knew my wives, Bakoth and Zuag, would have heard the rifle fire and would already be on their way, but I felt better after I shouted. I sure as fuck didn't want to fight this thing alone. I fired 3 more shots into the trunk of the spiky skin of the monster and blew chunks of the mud-colored skin off it. Dark brown ichor began to ooze from the tattered holes, and the monster roared as it finally pulled itself fully out of the fissure. The spike-covered freak had a long, fat body that jiggled like congealed hamburger grease, and its short, powerful legs ended in clawed and webbed feet. Amrila's shrill battle cry cut through the swamp, and then the horned woman rushed out of the trees with both swords drawn. My Zinkari wife rushed the toad-like creature without a hint of fear, leaped into the air, and crossed her blades in preparation to slice an X into the fuggly bastard's chest. But then the beast opened its lipless maw, and a ropey, pale pink tongue shot out at her. The tongue must have been 3 yards long, and it stretched out toward Amrila in the blink of an eye. But the creature's aim must have still been off from the flash of light on my rifle, and the red-skinned woman was ready. Amrila quickly uncrossed her swords with a decisive slice and cut off 2 feet at the end of the mud-colored monster's tongue, and the beast let out a shrieking croak. The slimy pink appendage snapped back into the fucker's mouth, but a trickle of dark brown ichor ran down its chin. The shouts of the rest of my friends filled the swamp as they also ran into view, and I moved to the cover behind a tree while the beast was distracted by Amrila. This was our go-to tactic. The horned woman was fast and wily, so she would distract the enemy while Nilame and I lit them up with rifle fire. As I put my back to the tree, I looked around to see where my people were and make sure I had a clean shot. I spotted Bulra and Chatteron further off, and it looked like the orcish woman was struggling to get away from the slim elf as he tried to pull her out of harm's way. I didn't have time to figure out what that was about, because I had a good shot on the toad monster, and the seer was far enough away from the fight that she wouldn't be in any immediate danger anyway. I shouldered the Galil and trained my red dot on the back of the fucker's bald head, just below the hole I assumed served as its ear. Then I squeezed the trigger twice, and Toadie's head jerked to one side as part of its skull was blown away. The huge, spiked creature teetered for a moment, and it took a lumbering step forward before it realized it was already dead. Then Toadie fell to the ground with a crash.
"What in the name of the gods was that thing?"
Bakoth shouted from where he stood with his sword at the ready 30 feet away. I imagined that between the earplugs and the deafening sound of the first rifle fire before he would have put them in, the hawk-faced general had a hard time modulating his voice right then.
"It's a lesser demon,"
Amrila said loudly as she stepped toward the spiky-skinned monster.
"And a disgusting one at that. It looks like an animated piece of shit."
"At least it's not animated now," I snorted as I stepped out from behind the tree and started toward the petrified spearman to check on him. And we were able to put it down pretty quick. The whole party was beside me now, and I could see Bakoth and Nilame looked shaken. I glanced over at Chatteron and Bulra, and I could also tell the elven archer looked a little pale. The Dolrath lived close to the Twilight region, but they rarely had to enter it. Bulra and Zueg both wore concerned expressions, but they lived in Torsbane, right next to the entrance of the Twilight in the Karardu territory, so I had to imagine they were more accustomed to the idea of fighting demons.
"Bulra!"
the orc captain barked as he watched his sister approach the fissure the demon had crawled out of.
"Have a care for your safety!"
"I need to close this before anything else comes up through it,"
the mystic argued and shook her head defiantly.
"For all we know, this leads down into the deeper dark."
"That's what worries me,"
Zueg retorted. Then the ground beneath our feet heaved. I staggered before I could steady myself, and I knew there was in fact something else down that hole.
"Defensive positions!"
I shouted as I ran toward the fissure and leaped to the other side.
"We got another one coming!"
I physically put myself between the seer and the wide crack in the ground. Then I shouldered my Galil as I trained it on the fissure.
"Chatteron, get Bora out of here!"
I shouted over my shoulder to the bald elf.
"Wait!"
the orcish woman shouted as Chatteron grabbed her arm.
"I can help!"
"Only if you can do it from a safe distance,"
I replied. Then I saw movement in the shadows of the fissure and clicked on my flashlight again. But I was careful to keep it pointed at the opening, so I didn't blind any of my friends by accident. As the light shone down the hole, I saw a shiny black tentacle for a brief second before it pulled back into the darkness. Jesus Christ on a cracker, what the fuck was that? Then a piercing scream emitted from the hole, and something huge shot out of the fissure as if it had been launched from a cannon. I followed the thing with the sight of my rifle as it flew straight up, but all I could see for a moment was the underside of a pair of sinewy legs and a comically undersized dick and balls. I fired 2 shots, rapid fire, at the new demon as it came down through the air and landed on the other side of the chasm, where Zueg and Nilame both were. One bullet hit, and there was a puff of dust and a ragged hole where tendons and bits of dried, jerky-like flesh framed the wound. Then the husk of a monster hit the ground, and the cavern floor shook from the impact. The lesser demon stared at me with lidless, bloodshot eyes, and the thing looked like a walking muscular system, but all dried out and withered. It stood 8 feet tall, and its dehydrated lips curled back from needle-sharp teeth in a hellish grimace. The demon's emaciated chest heaved, and it screamed again, loud enough this time to kick on my headphones.
"What the fuck?"
I shouted, and fired again at the mummified bastard's head. In my haste, I hadn't properly aimed, and the bullet grazed the top of the thing's skull. There was another dry puff of dust and a thin tear where the bullet hit, but now the fucker was pissed.
Run!
I shouted to Bull Run Shadowrun as the demon screamed again, and I backed up with my arm out to help push the seer out of the way.
Come on!
The elven archer shouted as he tugged on the green-skinned woman's arm. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Bulra finally turn and run, and I clicked on my laser and tried to train it on the skinless demon's chest as I continued backing up to put a little more distance between myself and the monster and hopefully draw it away from Nylame. The dried-out fucker suddenly ran at me and easily cleared the chasm in a single bound, so I continued to move back and fired. It was impossible to carefully aim and move, but I sent several bullets into the thing's left shoulder, and the creaky husk of a demon paused as it cried out in pain. Then, Bakoth rushed in and brought his sword down in a graceful arc across the back of the demon's right leg. The lesser demon screeched as his knee almost buckled, and then he turned to snarl at the red-haired warrior behind him. Before it could retaliate, Amrila ran forward while the needle-toothed demon's eyes were on Bakoth, and she slashed right at the creature's genitals. The horned woman sliced the demon almost up to its belly button, and then she tucked forward and tumbled between its legs.
Eddie!
I heard Nylame cry behind me as I started to take aim again.
Look out! The crack!
I turned to see a mass of shiny black tentacles boil up out of the fissure as they writhed and stretched. Then a pair of misshapen shoulders covered in lumpy muscles appeared, and two hands the size of manhole covers slammed onto the marshy ground as a third demon squeezed its way out of the crack. It was impossible to tell where its head was, or if the thing had a head at all. All I could see was a mindless mass of tentacles that seemed to grow out of the 5-foot-wide shoulders. The torso was a confusion of folds and short, half-formed appendages, and the trunk-like legs ended in 4 clawed digits that weren't exactly fingers or toes. As my mind reeled back from the mind-boggling shape rising out of the chasm, I moved on instinct, swung the Galil around, and started to fire. My heart pounded against my chest, and the palms of my hands were covered in sweat. But I kept it together enough to cluster my shots, in the hopes that what had happened to the transformed Igurg would happen to whatever the fuck this demon was. I fired 4 shots in quick succession into the black monster's stomach, and there was a spray of thick, gray, glue-like substance streaked with red, like when you blow your nose 1 too many times when you have a bad cold. The tentacles that grew in the tight cluster of the shoulders of the demon split apart, and I realized with sick dread it was the bastard's mouth. As the tentacle demon shrieked, 2 swollen wet tongues plopped out of its maw, and the underside of both tongues were covered in barbed suckers I didn't want to find out the purpose of.
Hey, Wiggly!
I heard Amrila shout.
Come and try your luck, you ugly fuck!
The tentacle demon seemed to turn its body toward the horned woman before it turned away again and lumbered right for me. I took a deep breath to steady myself, aimed at the oozing hole in the thing's chest, and fired off 3 more rounds into the same spot. The demon's back arched with pain as more bullets opened the wound further, and I saw a brief glimmer of light buried deep inside of the gore and gray sludge. Then the sound kicked off again as Nylame fired at the tentacle demon's side from across the chasm. The demon reeled like it was not sure which threat to attack first, and Amrila used its hesitation, darted in, and buried her jeweled sword into the shiny black guts of the tentacle demon. Then, the red-skinned woman let go of her sword and danced out of the way of the fucker's heavy blow as the thing tried to ward her off, and it missed the Zinkari woman by only inches. I rushed forward and put the bead of my laser dead center of the gaping wound in the demon's shoulder, and then I fired until I felt the click of the bolt locking back when the mag ran out. I backed up to make sure I was out of the bastard's reach as I fished in my pocket for another mag, but I wouldn't need it. The black jewel of the hilt of Amrila's sword started to glow like an opal. Blue, teal, and purple pricks of light started to swirl in the onyx surface, and I noticed the light from my cluster of bullets lodged in the tentacle demon's shoulder began to glow brighter too. Then flames the color of the lights in the black stone erupted around the wound and the blade of the sword. The tentacle demon fell to its knees and wrapped its huge hands around the hilt of the sword, but even as its muscles visibly strained, it couldn't seem to dislodge the blade from inside itself. Within seconds, the lesser demon was consumed by the multicolored light. Then I heard Bakoth scream behind me. I turned to see the skinless demon holding the red-haired warrior in the air by the elf's neck. The husk monster had the thumb of its other hand pressed into Bakoth's eye socket, and there was a shit ton of blood cascading down his hawkish face.
Zuag took his war axe and chopped at the sinewy tendons of the creature's arm. But it would take several more swings to sever the limb, and the dehydrated demon would have its thumb through the hawk-faced man's brain by then. Feistrin also hacked away at the demon's damaged leg to try and force it to let the general go, but the freak ignored her blows too. I took two steps forward as I clicked in another mag, put my red dot in the demon's bloodshot eyes as it stared into Bakoth's anguished face, and fired two bullets into the fucker's head. The pulpy eye burst into a cloud of dust, and the bastard's head snapped back. Then the demon dropped the general and toppled to the ground, and Zuag and Feistrin had to dodge out of the way.
"You ticklish fuck!"
Bakoth spat, and he struggled to his feet as he grabbed his sword off the marshy ground. Then the mohawked soldier stood over the skinless demon and hacked off the hand that had been around his throat.
"I'm going to mount this above my door!"
he shouted at the motionless corpse,
"and tell everyone who comes to my home that I had to take this for a trophy because they wouldn't have been able to see your cock without the aid of spectacles!"
"Are you okay?" I asked, and approached Bakoth, and I was a little worried about the man despite his obvious vigor.
"Yes,"
the red-haired general replied as he turned to me, and I winced when I saw the bloodied hole where his left eye had been.
"But I'm afraid I've lost my boyish good looks."